Dragons of Pern.
Yep.
So yeah, lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of Hamwavium, because you know when you got dragons running around, I think you're already in Hamwavium land to begin with.
I had a conversation with her son at 20 Books. Mm-hmm. He wanders around there as well. He's a nice guy.
He is. I've chatted with him a few times.
He's very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe it.
Well, of course you wouldn't. You're you. I think
you're just name dropping. You're just name dropping. You're like, oh yes, well I met so and so. I'm really good friends with so and so.
You know, I wouldn't have met him if David Weber hadn't introduced us. You know, things like that.
And then he goes and drops David Weber's name. You know, this is what I'm talking about. It's just, yeah.
Well, should I bring Kevin J. Anderson into this?
It's getting worse.
You can't bring, what, I mean, this? If you bring Kevin J. Anderson into it, then I have to bring Kevin J. Anderson in it and relate that my favorite Dragon Con memory is Kevin J. Anderson going completely fanboy over Mercedes Lackey when I was walking the merch rooms with her.
Okay. All right, I guess I'll accept that. But still, I don't know. I think Terry roster of everybody he's met and goes, all right, I'm going to bring this one out on this show.
Now, if I want to go ahead and impress you, I think I'll bring Larry Correa out to, you know, pick you up by the scruff of the neck and walk you around. He's big. He's really big.
He is. I mean, he probably has 2-3 inches of height on you, and so they're could conceivably be some, you know, pickup and scruffing, but you'd yell the entire time.
But I'm about 70 pounds heavier than I look. Okay, maybe not 70. Maybe I just look like I am, which is huge. That's beside the point.
It's those swollen ankles of yours.
We're here to say, howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Robot Society. I am Paul E. Cooley. Joining me, Veronica Jaguar and Terry Mixon. How the hell are you two?
I'm better now that I've recovered from that editing spree.
Did you get any words on you?
I may have dropped a few words on the floor and had to sweep them up later.
That sounds like how my haircut went today.
Yeah, but, you know, unlike you when you get a haircut, I don't look like a silverback gorilla being shaved.
Now, wait a minute. Oh. You're stealing my fucking line from me.
That's the best kind to steal your own joke from you to use it against you.
That is utter theft. You're so lazy.
I'm a writer. I steal things for a living. I'm a writer.
Yeah, but most writers actually work, Terry.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, I have to work? Who makes up these rules?
That kind of theft is just lazy. That's just so lazy. You want to talk about plagiarism? My God, right here on this show. He wasn't even going to give me credit for it. I should
have a copyright strike against me right there.
Not on this show. Because then people would have to give us copyright strikes for me singing, please release me, let me go. Or something like that. That's just not the point. V, how the hell are you?
Oh, geez, busy. Just, I, yay, because I'm booked and I've got writing projects that I've actually done, you know, work on. And I had an author buy out the rest of their royalties for a couple of books so they can get them selling on their own sites because of all of the nonsense we talked about last week with Spotify and those shenanigans. But that was nice. That was a nice chunk of change that I can use to put towards some other projects and starting on other stuff. Oh, and family things, because teenagers. So the joy of realizing one child needs braces. And
hello, second mortgage on your home.
It's actually not that bad, but it says something when I look at an estimate and I need to start calculating how many books it takes.
So, yeah, I know that feeling.
So, yeah. And then managing bowling tournaments, because that's where I get to run off to after the show. Luckily, it's local, but it's all weekend. Starts February is kind of like the start of the travel-esque season, where for a couple weekends I'm always going to be, luckily this one's here in town, but they're going to be some others in Florida and what have you.
Well, I would hope they were in Florida, because that's kind of where you live.
It is. It is. If I was in the Midwest, it'd be easier to get to some, but Florida. Yay.
So do you have any Amish or Mennonite bowlers? Because wasn't there a movie about that? Amish bowling or bowler or something like that? Have Bill Murray in it?
No.
Am I completely
I don't recall anything like
that. It's a movie with Woody Harrelson and somebody, and I think it's Bill Murray. I can't remember. It's something to do with bowling.
It's very, very niche, and I'd have to do some research. I don't know.
You okay, know, chat, help me.
maybe you're thinking about, you know, oh God, I can't remember his name there. Where the
Jeff Bridges?
Is no,
I'm
right
not thinking
name?
About the Big no. Lebowski. Not the Big
that's,
Lebowski.
That's the only one I know about bowling. That's the only bowling movie I know.
That's not a bowling movie. Bowling just has to be part of it. This was a
yeah, tomato, movie. Tomato.
Are about bowling. Hang on.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Well, that's hopeless. I have to look up Woody Harrelson because he's Kentucky boy.
Pretty sure it's Woody Harrelson.
I see Matt has joined joined this here.
Say again?
You're thinking of Kingpin.
Thank you. See, Rick got it. See, I'm not completely on crack.
Not completely yet. I see that Matt has joined us. Matt, I had made a post and tagged you in it on Discord asking you if Welsh speakers walked faster than English speakers, and I kind of still need the answer to that. I just, curious minds want to know.
8 minutes versus 6 minutes?
8 minutes versus 6 minutes.
Unless the Welsh measure time differently, which is entirely probable.
Well, you know, that's possible too. But you know, if 8 minutes for English people is 6 minutes for Welsh speakers, then they've got to get all of those long words down into even less time than we imagine possible.
I think that's actually why it's 6 versus 8, because if you're English, it takes you that long to figure out where the fuck you're going because of how all the words are spelled weird and nobody knows what to do. So I think it's more like that.
That's strange and makes a lot of sense.
Cut it out. It is not Sunshine and Lathe. Go away. Talking about a 90s reference.
Just to be the man who
No. We'll get a cut. No, we won't. I had that song going through my head the other day, and I don't even know why.
So what about you, Paul? What have you been up to?
Mm-hmm. Released a book.
Stop me now. That's like one a year or something like
it's
that,
only,
right?
Fuck off. It's only nine months late. And Terry can kiss all of my ass. Not just the fattest part of my ass, but my entire ass, okay?
I got a big mouth, but I don't got enough lips for that.
Oh, yeah, you do. Trust me. Anyway, so got an ancient trap, finally kicked out in the world, and I am so happy to have that damn thing off my plate. Now I just have to figure out how to publish 4 more this year. Considering how long it took to get everything ready to go for this one, I'm a little daunted. I don't know what else to say. I'm daunted, but it's good. It's out there. It's selling. Obviously too early for reviews and whatnot. So hopefully people will like it. I had some people on YouTube because I put out a YouTube trailer and it's kind of cheesy, but people liked it for some damn reason. I'm promising to buy the book. So we'll see if that happens. And I'm trying to record the audiobook right now and it's going very, very slowly. Matt says, yeah, that's not great, although it's better than emailing to get a translation into Welsh for signed, then making a sign which says, out of office, please call head office. What kind of weird country do you live in, man? We don't have to get things translated into Texan, you know, it just kind of is.
No comment on that. But I did find out something interesting. I meant to say it last week, but I forgot because I got sidetracked by everything else we were talking about. I had a conversation with Variant, and the series that I'm currently writing is slated for 15 books, and was asked, is that enough runway? Not those specific words, but is that enough runway?
Runway for what?
To end the story in a way that it needs to be ended.
Oh, okay.
I've only got 2 books left. He says, is that enough space to end what you've got going on? And I said, maybe, maybe not. So the word is, well, if it needs a book or two more, then it takes a book or two more.
Oh, God.
Well, it's not a go God thing. I'd rather not rush a story to its conclusion because satisfying.
No. I'm not suggesting you do that. I'm just saying you're a long-winded motherfucker if you can't wrap it up in 15 books. That's all I'm saying.
I've got a lot of shit going on, sport. There's a lot of things happening.
Got a lot of testicles in the air. I mean, balls in the air. Right. Got it. Understood. Oh, God.
Julius understands.
For our listeners, that would be Julius. Currently trying to
Julius,
smother
who
Terry.
Loves his dad.
I had to lock him out of the room earlier because I needed to work and he wanted to climb on me.
Oh, yeah. So now he's going to take advantage.
He says, Dad's sitting here talking. I'm going to be here.
Let's see. What else? What else is going on? Not a whole lot other than I didn't do any writing this week because I worked on Evolution. Taking it to town. I got to focus on that next week and get it ready. We're still having discussions with Fireside, still having discussions with all sorts of things going on. So there are things going on in the background I can't really talk too much about, but I'm working and trying to get things done as quickly as possible and also maintain the quality. Maintaining the quality with the audio is a real pain in the ass because of Terry keeps sending mariachi bands to my house and fucking everything up. And so I can only record between the hours of 4 and 6.
He needs to send them along with a taco truck and give you a cut of the sales.
Then if I send a taco truck, I'm keeping the sales for myself. If I send an ice cream truck, I might cut him in.
Rick, you know, that's just really sad. How evolved could you get in just a week? Yeah, it's just really sad. I can get very evolved. So that's what's more or less going on in my world is just the handling the release and getting all that crap updated, creating YouTube videos, all the stuff I got to do for a release. Which kind of brings us to today's topic, which is, all right, you press publish, now what? Doesn't the money just come rolling in?
That's right. That's all that happens, right?
You hit the magic publish button and that's everything?
Yeah. You don't have to do anything else, right? Right? I'm doing this right, aren't I?
Well, I mean, technically you're supposed to tell people about it. Because...
Tell people? Don't they just find you?
Well, no, because, I mean, I think you disabled all of the spy cameras in your house that, you know, stream everything to the interwebs. So people aren't going to know the minute you press the publish button unless you actually, you know, tell them. Unless you want to, you know, re-engage the cameras. But that could frighten people.
Well, okay. So let me go through the list of what I did. All right. Now, granted, I'm not in social media in a lot of places because fuck that. But I did put out a YouTube trailer for the folks who follow the podcast on YouTube. I put out a podcast trailer in the latest version of latest episode of The Black. So people are getting that and getting that hit in their faces. I told them to help keep the podcast commercial free by buying books. A not so subtle hint. Because Libsyn is on my ass about, hey, you need to sell your downloads are getting high there, Bubba. You really need to start commercializing, monetizing this shit. Couldn't believe they actually sent me an email saying you really should get in our anyway. So I did all that. I posted on my Facebook page, both of them. I put it on LinkedIn. I put it on Mastodon where it got shared like crazy. I made up my email list and I sent them an email with a pretty cover and everything else and blah, blah, blah. I did all of those things. Is that what I'm supposed to be doing?
That's certainly part of what you're supposed to do.
Oh yeah. What about the rest of it?
The rest of it is writing more books faster.
There's that.
Motherfucker. I have 5 goddamn books waiting to get published. 5. Fuck you! Sorry. Did I say that out loud?
Yes, that was definitely loud.
Yeah, you used your outside voice again. Yeah. But I don't know. I think there's probably additional steps you could take using what you're already doing. Okay. And that's just, I'm not a fan of having to recreate, like create additional content. If you can take the content that you're already making and just slightly tweak or repurpose it and put it out to a different channel, because the fact of the matter is people who are going to go and who are going to see you on YouTube, or who are going to follow you on LinkedIn, who are going to be following you on Facebook, or who are following you on Mastodon, they don't necessarily all exist in the same circles. It's a Venn diagram. Mm-hmm. So figuring out how to get enough overlap so that you're getting more people. And sometimes it's looking at different channels where you can find readers and just taking the content and reposting it. One of the things that I've learned from having to advertise stuff for the narrators organization with the classes that I run or that I coordinate, we have to put our social media out in 5 places. Mm-hmm. And we have to advertise no less than 3 times for a class, because people forget. I'm a wonderful example of that. They have to be reminded. And timing is everything with social media. If you drop a message at 11 o'clock Eastern, you might
nobody's
not hit,
gonna
like,
see it.
That's not true. It'll be people on the West Coast.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at people on the East Coast, or if you're looking at people in Europe, it's weird. So it's knowing where and when you can advertise stuff and how often you can put things, and then when people expect to see it. So one of the first things that I would say is plan or schedule. If you release a book anytime, the other thing to do is always plan to do like an amplification or a resend, repost, what have you, on Tuesdays. Because Tuesdays are technically new media, and that can be books, TV, movies, audiobooks. That's when stuff gets put on Tuesdays. And you might go, oh, what about saturation? Well, I wouldn't worry so much about saturation as just knowing the hashtags to use, because people will search for stuff based on hashtags. And if you can be part of that net that gets pulled in, more people are going to see you.
One of the things I was planning on doing is I haven't released the YouTube trailer to anybody but YouTube. So I'm going to hold on to that. Yeah.
What I would say is, because Instagram and Facebook are linked, then you should look at using that, because a lot of readers and authors are on Instagram. And you can use a lot of the stuff you put. It's a book cover. You've got a fucking shiny book cover. You should use the shiny book cover to get more eyes on it.
But I don't use Instagram.
You might, and that's the thing. It's either trying to use that or repurposing the video and going to TikTok, where you have a lot of, readers. And you've got the whole book talk subset, because you've got the content anyway.
This is true.
So
this is very true.
So that's my thing. You already have the content, and you can post to TikTok from a browser. You don't necessarily have to get a phone and worry about all of the junk with having a mobile app installed. Because Lord knows I don't want to deal with that. So, but
Matt asks, also going old school and using your newsletter. You do have one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I already said I used it.
But yeah. Have you tagged them twice?
I haven't hit them yet. Again, yet.
See, when I put Variant releases their books on Sunday, and so I put out a release notice to my subscribers on Sunday, and then I put one out on Friday that is text only, because I had heard somewhere that some people get their stuff blocked into spam because it is got images in it. So I put just one with text and link. And I also use that as a thing saying, hey, I'm sorry you're getting this twice if you're getting it twice, but it's a reminder as well. So I'm not really that sorry.
And people who like you won't mind being reminded twice, as long as it's not within 24 or 36 hours.
Well, the cool thing is, like I said, hanging on to the trailer for a few days to everybody except for the YouTube crowd, I think it actually gives me an excuse to hit again. And oh, by the way, here's the link to the trailer. You know, it's kind of deal. If you want to see the all the covers and everything else.
Do you put your trailer to your patrons first before you post it publicly?
Not usually.
You should.
Not usually.
Well, it's a reward, patrons, another reason, you know, to be a patron.
Sometimes the patrons get stuff early. Sometimes they don't when it comes to, like, video trailers. Usually it's looking at the number of clicks or people who see it. It's like, yeah, they're glad to see it. And I'll leave links to those kinds of things in there. But I'm not really sure all that many people go look for it. Now, when I announce a book launch and I put that stuff in there, then I get a lot of, like with an Ancient Trap, and I announce that on Patreon, I got some... you know, I got some traction there with people commenting and everything else. So it's not like I'm not using those outlets as well to talk to the folks who have probably already read the book, you know, probably already read or listened to the book because it's already been run on Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee. Excuse me. So now it's just, hey, the book is there if you want to buy it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Please review. Please leave reviews. Please, for the love of God, leave reviews. So I'm trying to nail all of those different avenues. I do have an Instagram account. I haven't used it probably ever. It's not linked to my Facebook account because I deleted my Facebook account. Matt says, which is the best way for us to buy the books? That doesn't mean someone else taking a massive cut. Define massive cut.
Which way gives you the most money?
Amazon right now is probably the best way to do it simply because it knocks me up in the algorithm. And that was the wrong way to put that. It basically makes you rise up in the algorithm. And also that means if you bought it and you read it and you review it, it's going to count as an actual verified purchase. So right now, the best thing to do for these books while they're Kindle exclusive is just buy them from Amazon, period.
And you still get roughly 70%. Yeah. So it's... they take a cut, but it's not a monstrous cut.
Yeah, so it just kind of depends on, you know, what book it is or what's going on. Like, for instance, if it's the Derelict Saga, and we want to talk about the audiobook, you buy it from me. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit different. Rick, hush. It's a little bit different when you're talking about, you know, the actual ebooks. I might get more money if I sold it from my site. I get 100% of it, but that's not going to help me get it in front of other folks. That's the rub with having your own shop and having your own store. The cool thing about selling something like a Derelict Saga in audio is it's not available as a single thing anywhere. You'd have to get all four books separately, whereas if you go to my site, you can get it in one shot, all four books. So stuff like that I'm really... you know, looking at as far as what I'm trying to do and where to sell things and everything else, it just depends on what it is I'm selling. But Amazon is the best place to, and the only place really to get to buy the Black series and this one as well, because they're all Kindle exclusive right now. So that's the only way to do that. It's the best way to buy my books that gives me the most money, buy it now, wherever you see it. Trying to get me a few more pennies is more likely to make you forget to buy the book altogether. Good point, Doc. Mm-hmm. Chris, if you didn't see it on Mastodon, I don't know what to tell you. Because it got reshared all over the place.
That's a very good point that you made, though, about just since it's Kindle exclusive, just get it, like, you know, get it now. Keep it visible in the algorithm so that know, it winds up being whatever the Amazon equivalent of top of mind is.
Yeah, I mean, the moment you get that bump where you get several people coming in and buying it once, that helps, that just keeps it going, right? As long as you can keep people in there bumping it up, then you're in good shape. So it's really important for people, if you know an author and you know they've got a new book out, if you can buy it close to when it's released, it really does help a lot rather than purchasing it later.
Yeah. And if you have Kindle Unlimited, just it should be a no-brainer. If you want to support an author, go and just add it to your library immediately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not to say you can't buy it later, so you can get them both ways, coming and going.
Yeah, and there's other ways to support the author. JR says, do you think that selling things direct to consumers is ever going to take off for authors?
I don't think so.
I think it depends on who you are.
The problem with it is you might have, you know, if Brandon Sanderson opens his own store, he's going to do okay. Mm-hmm. If everybody else does exactly. it, getting enough eyeballs on it is going to make it problematic. There's a trade-off. Why go with Amazon? Because they have the biggest audience. Mm-hmm. And so could they take off with their own personal site? Yeah, I suppose they could, but I certainly wouldn't count on it.
If I had a podcast that had 100,000 downloads a week, I could get away with it. I could be, I mean, it, you know, folks like Scott Sigler, when they release a GFL book, man, they sell out in no time, right?
But
and they're selling that off of their store.
Community.
But they have built a community. Exactly.
Right. So it's less about how many, it's less about when does it make sense to create a storefront for consumers and more about when does it make sense to make things exclusive for my community, when that group that you have is big enough to accommodate or to do things for and have that, you know, come back. Because I've seen a couple authors for whom I've narrated, and they have very thriving communities on Facebook, and they wind up releasing, you know, additional artwork, fan art, bonus chapters, but they interact with their fans, with their community. So it's not just, they don't just interact with them when a book needs to be bought.
Right.
I think that's a huge thing. You can only reap the benefits of the publish button if you've cultivated those relationships during the writing process.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky, and yet it's not tricky. Tricky building a community is tricky. I'm obviously in a weird spot because I have a podcast that I've been running for, fuck. Oh my God, it's been 15 years now.
I was about to say, I started when my middle child was 6 months old and he just turned 18. So that's as long as what you would call the old guard of podcast fiction has been going. And dear God, I feel old. So that's right. Your podcast may be able to vote. Who knows? It may be getting up there.
You young whippersnappers!
Michael Wally says, they say the best promotion is the book cover itself. What's it like working with Pondy on it? Pondy is amazing. I had a piece of art that I almost went with for the book cover. And I used it for the Patreon, and it worked fine. It was pretty good and gave you kind of like a suspenseful feel and had that adventure brooding dramatic feel to it. I liked it, but I wanted something more. But I gave that to Pondy and said, hey, this is what I've got. This is kind of what I'm thinking. And what he came back with was something that was so mind-blowingly cool, that it's not something I could ever have come up with. And it's like that with every book with him, which is why Evolution is going to be such a fucking treat to see when it's done. We still have to talk about that, but I'm really looking forward to the cover for Oceania. I think that's going to be fucking awesome. But anyway, I'll stop fanboying. If you find a good cover artist, it's just like if you find a good editor that you can work with really well. You find a good cover artist that you work with really well, who understands your work, who is a reader of your work. That is really difficult for me to put a price on. Mm-hmm. And I can work with other folks. I don't wish to. And it just is a matter of I found the sweet spot with somebody who I can trust to represent my work. And hopefully the matter that's between the covers is as good as the cover. So I can't say enough things about him, about Pondy. He's just, Scott Pond Designs will really, really has your back. They really do. He really does put an enormous amount of effort, and it shows. There's really good stuff.
They said that the cover is the best advertising, is what the commenter said. But I would go ahead and say that while that's certainly true, the best advertisement for your book is the next book.
See earlier comment. But you're right. You're right. If I can kick out another book, if I can get Evolution out next quarter and follow that by Oceania, followed by Extinction, if that is the way it goes, or if I put out Neptune Scars or Signal Decay instead of Extinction by the end of the year, that's one a quarter. That's a pretty damn good cadence.
Especially considering how many words are in each of those books.
Yeah, because you're talking like minimum 90. It's not like you're thrown out a novella. Yeah, I'm not throwing out novellas. So we're talking, you know, minimum 90 pretty much, and max of who knows. So the that kind of cadence would really be good and also wouldn't kill my pocketbook. Because covers cost money. Editing costs money. Things cost money.
Yes, they do.
Yep.
So you have to kind of budget. And yeah, I could put out 5-6 books this year. I wouldn't be able to afford it. I got to have a book out there that makes some money so I can pay for the cover for the next book. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what it is, right? And I was thinking about this today. It's like somebody asked me, when is The Black going to go out of Amazon exclusivity? And the answer is after Extinction has paid for itself. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a long time for it to pay for itself, because it's also got to pay for a lot of the other books previous. So yeah, it's in the red. The whole series is in the red as far as I'm concerned. It will be in the red for quite a while. So it's really a matter of, I got to make the money back. I have to make my bank account happy, because I know the moment that I go take away KU, that's 50% of my income from those books goes bye-bye. So the idea of making it wide, yeah, I love the idea. I can't financially fucking do it right now. So it's going to have to wait, and we'll see how things go. Some other books of mine, I would be willing to take them out of KU at some point. Some of them aren't even in KU, and I don't really care. I don't sell regardless. But I like having the option to sell those eBooks from my site if people are coming there and going, oh, I don't have this one, click. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also a nice way to have that. But it's a lot of work figuring out how to make all this work, and then figuring out exactly what your cadence is, regardless of what your writing cadence is. I mean, if I do this right, I'm going to have a 3-book backlog from now until doomsday. I'll have 2 or 3 books waiting to get published. That's not a bad problem to have, except for the fact they're not making me money when they're sitting on the virtual shelf. So Rick says, I'm so glad to have Athon take care of that stuff. Yeah, I hate you. both you and Terry. I loathe you. I loathe every fiber of your being. But yeah, I mean, that's another reason to go with a good small publisher, is you get yourself out of this mess. You have to give up some control, and you have to give up some money. But the bottom line is, does that help you make more money? And that's the question.
And that's the key. You've got to find a small publisher that can be that partner to bring in the extra sales to make it worth you losing, you know, that some of that control. So you got to juggle it. You got to make the decision if it's right for you.
Yeah, I mean, if they're doing the promotion, if they're getting you badass covers, if they're taking really good care of you on the editing department, that's awesome. That is freaking awesome.
Well, and there's also, if you want to, if you're going to go with a small press, you want to make sure that they have other authors who are successful. Because if they're doing something and promoting, like Variant's doing, if they're releasing all of their books on a Sunday, and, you know, two or three books get released, Terry's is one of them that's in there. Well, someone who's looking for one of the other authors, oh, well, this Terry Mixon guy has a book out. Well, I can go grab two of them. So you're getting that also bought effect.
I don't know that Variant has multiple authors at one time yet. I think it's getting close to that. But there is definitely a bleed over effect because he's got a massive Facebook group. And when they're talking about advertising, there's somebody to say, oh, I'm jonesing for the next book in this series. So I'll go ahead and try that Terry Mixon guy while I'm waiting because I've seen his name here.
That's the virtue. If you've got, you know, back in the day, there was a certain press that did the right thing and had cultivated their stable. And they put out a certain kind of book and they had basically people would go and buy this company's books, whose name I'm not going to mention. Well, that was all great and fine until that company stopped doing promotion, stopped being interested in making their authors successful, and it became this, it just wasn't worth it. And I still have a few books locked up in that mess. But if you find a small press that's actually on the ball, trying to make money, busting their ass and everything else, and is a good partner, I think you really are in good shape as far as that goes. Rick says, why not do a push rapid release and have out there more in the market? Because I couldn't afford the covers and editing. That's why. Me personally. If you can, great, go for it. But not me. JR says, I would quibble, Veronica. I would think that an up-and-coming newer press could help, too. Not everyone can be Rick and get on with Athon or Variant like Terry.
True. They could. I've seen plenty of, at least from the audiobook side, I've seen plenty of newer audiobook presses. But the thing is, they are dedicated. And so it's from the moment that they have that contract and that book out, they have a marketing plan. Mm. They have reviewers. They have ARC teams. They, even though they might be a small publisher, they act big. Mm-hmm. And they still, you know, put stuff out there. So the size doesn't necessarily matter, but how are they acting? How are they promoting? Are they taking care of their authors? Because, you know, it's how I recommend people to find certain publishers.
Are they a partner?
Yeah.
Are they a partner?
Are they a collaborator? Do they see you as an asset and a collaborator, not just the producer of a product?
I also want to say that it really depends on the reach of the small press. If True. You're really a teeny press and you don't bring enough to the table to balance out what the author is bringing to the table, then that won't help you. You need to find a small press that has an audience, that has the reach, that has the reputation to bring in enough readers to make it worth your while as an author, even as somebody that may be a beginning author. Just because you're new doesn't mean you should take the first offer. You've got to look at what they're bringing to the table and decide if it actually is worth it for you.
And the background of the people running it.
Yeah, that's another thing is talking to other authors, and that's why I ended up mm-hmm. selling to Black, to whom I did, was because of Jake Bible, that bastard. And that worked out really well for me for a while.
I talked to other Variant authors about their experiences before I made a decision. And so I had an idea of what they thought, you know, candidly thought about that before I made a call.
And that's the other part of it is like B was saying, and Terry just mentioned, educating yourself and finding those other authors, find out how happy they are with their press. Find out how happy they are with their editor. Hell, if you like an indie author and you find out that you really like what they've done with their book, who made their cover? Who edited it? That may be some people you want to contact in the future. There may be some people that you want to hit up for services. at least to get an idea of what they cost. There's a lot of different things you can do. I don't know about other folks, but I always put, you know, Pondy's always gets attribution in my books versus Scott Pond Designs, you know, cover layout, et cetera, mm-hmm. ad infinitum, even in the ebook, and even in the audiobook text, I've got that there. That's because it's simpatico. I want to bring him business. I want to give him that. If I had an editor that was not from a service, it was actually more of a partner with me, then I would put their name in there. I would make it very clear that this is a relationship I have with these people, and these people are helping make this book happen. They're making me look good, you know. And that's kind of what you want from a publisher.
Yeah. For my books, the ones that I do myself, I mention Veronica in the copyright section. I don't have to, but I do.
I wouldn't mention her at all. That's bad.
Some people do. I've had other authors mention stuff when I've done the audio for things, and it's lovely. It's not necessary, but it's a lovely nod, and I will happily take it.
I bet very few people see it, but nevertheless, it is there.
So. Rick says, I took a chance on Athon because I write fast enough that I could sacrifice one series for an experiment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I sacrificed the black for an experiment.
The black is an experiment.
When Varian approached me, it was for a 3-book contract. And we would make our decision on how the series was doing at that point in time. So it was a limited amount of thing there. If the series had not taken off, then maybe it would only have been a very short series. But it did take off. It did have a lot of sales. And it grew.
Well, that's because you write a decent story.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm one of those people, I can't see the quality of my own work. I have to accept that I'm writing okay, and if nobody's screaming, it's good enough.
It's pretty much all you can do, period.
Same here. I will sit there and I will start writing. And again, as a collaborative writer with someone who has far more, I'll just keep writing. And then nothing has been said. And I'm like, And I'll have to stop and go to my chat window and go, are you still there? Is everything okay? Why did you stop? Okay, I'll keep going. All right, go. But yeah, it's helpful to have that gut check.
Canaries in the coal mine are an awesome thing to have.
As long as they survive. Otherwise, I want to be hauling out, you know, dead coal dusted birds. That's gross.
If they don't survive, then I think there's something wrong with the product you're putting out because it's killing things. So not in the right way. Just saying. Mm. How much should a good cover cost? I paid $40 for my last one.
I'll let Paul answer that. It's been a while since I've paid for a cover. A long while.
Let's put it this way. I would not be able to get the quality I want for $40.
No. There are some cover designers who will have days where they're just messing around and then make a cool cover and it's out there. And they'll say, oh, and I'll put this out for a reduced price. If you want it, come claim it. And then it's a case of where it just happens to fit. I know other authors who do cover design, and so they don't have to pay for it, but they obviously have to pay for the, what's the word? Items, attributes,
stock
the
art.
Pieces, the stock art, or.
And they've got to have the time that it takes them to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife does the covers that are for the series that I do on my own. So it takes her time and frustration, but it doesn't take me anything other than going, that looks great. Why don't you change all this stuff over here?
So yeah, I mean, you pay for the quality that you get, but be aware that don't judge a book by its cover. Oh, hell, we all judge books by their covers. I will tell you that one of the things that narrators are advised to do when we're working with indie authors is to look at your cover. Because quite frankly, if you're going to be cheap on your cover, you're going to be cheap on your narrator. And ain't got, nobody got time for that.
Covers and blurbs. Don't rush those. Don't give half-ass to those two things. You must have good ones. Those are what the audience is going to see before they buy your book.
Rick points out you're not just paying for the time of the cover, you're paying for the years of experience and practice. And that's key. It's you're paying for someone who has that eye and who knows what the industry is looking for in that genre.
I didn't know he started a press.
I don't know the name of this press. I'm not sure that I'm familiar with it.
I don't know. He's... So.
Paying for a craftsman, paying for an artist, yes.
Yeah. The first book is going to be expensive. Whether it's either going to be expensive in terms of the money that you're putting out, or it's going to be expensive in terms of the time that you're going to invest into everything after the first draft. Meanwhile, Julius is
still trying to kill
loving
Terry.
Loving on the headset.
One of the cool things about dealing with Pondy for a series is we figured out the template for all the black books. How the title was going to be done in every part, where my name was going to be on every book. You know, it's basically a template from that standpoint. And then that matches, and so everything looks good. Wow.
I think JR maybe came in kind of late. T. Morris may be a bit before your time.
So for those of you who don't know who T. Morris is, in the early days, the Wild West of podcast fiction, 2004, 5, and 6. Okay, so JR, you said you found DRS in 2016. This is at least 10 years, if not 12, mm-hmm. before then. And during that time, podcast fiction was just serialized novels. And T, along with... T was doing it. Scott Sigler was doing it. Phil Rossi was doing it. They...
T. Morris is a designated scapegoat, yeah.
This is also true. For those of us who have been in the podcast fiction realm for a while, yes, T is designated scapegoat. But he was one of the first people to do it. He's also the author. He's one of the co-authors of Podcasting for Dummies. And he is also the author of Twitch for Dummies. He's done a lot of... multimedia training and just multimedia fiction consumption, community building. And yes, Nate, thank you. Matthew Wayne Selznick was another big name doing that.
Brave Men Run. J.C. Hutchins. Oh, there's all that group that came in together. There was an entire wave of folk that all came out around the same time, which was Sigler,
who
really broke up, and
the other person,
Bossian, etc.
Young Junius, I loved
Seth Harwood.
Thank you. Okay, that was a great. Oh my gosh, that was so good. But yeah, so that there were a bunch of people who started serial podcast fiction in the mid 2000s, and yeah.
Let's see. I was third or fourth wave. I can't remember what they called us. It was me. Oh my God, I've forgotten her name. Holy crap.
What did she write?
I'm going to get smacked.
No, you won't.
I'm not going to go there.
It's like goldfish brain.
Anyway, there was a bunch of us that basically came in together and were, you know, Jake Bible was in that mix. Jeremy Rowe was in that mix.
Christiana Ellis.
Yes.
Abby Hilton.
Right.
Abigail Hilton. Nathan Lowell.
Starla, that's who I'm thinking of. Starla Hutchins.
Oh, Starla Hutchins, who was also, she did book cover design for a long time. I think she stepped away from it.
Yeah.
But yes, thank you. Doc pointed out T's original publisher was Dragon Moon Press. So
yeah, original.
That was T. Morris and Philippa Ballantyne, J. Daniel Sawyer. I think the first time I ever heard of him was Podcast Fiction, the Down from 10, also excellent. Yeah, there's... She said, so...
So if someone wanted to narrate her own books for a podcast, do you recommend a dedicated channel or adding it to her existing channel? And does it stunt your paid sales?
So here's the thing. One, it will not, because your podcast listening audience is different from your audiobook audience. When I did Secret World Chronicle, our podcast listening group was more of a community versus the folks who just bought the audiobook. Now, mind you, I narrated the podcast, and the podcast was completely unabridged, whereas the audiobook was narrated by Nick Podell, I believe, because of contracts through Bayon and who they contracted the audio out with. Two different, completely different groups. There are people who have heard all five SeaWorld Chronicle audiobooks who have no idea who the hell I am, aside from being an author on the books. So it's not necessarily going to stunt your growth. And you'll have people who maybe they'll want to collect everything, you know, Pokemon effect.
I have podcast listeners who buy the audiobook, but only listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. The podcast stuff actually brings people to your work. It does. My YouTube audience may not be huge by any stretch of the imagination, but I guarantee you at least 30 or 40 of those folks are buying every book that I have. And that's 30, 40 times 8 or 9 books, 10, 12 books that they end up purchasing. And I have no idea how many audiobooks they're purchasing. I don't know how, I haven't seen any numbers for The Black recently, so I don't know how those audiobooks are even doing. But the bottom line is that the podcast does not hurt you. The podcast helps, if anything, so long as the quality is good.
In the live channel, I posted a link to an audio file that part of it is recognizable. And if you're familiar at all with T. Morris, then hearing the start of this will make you think of T. Morris.
Oh, dear. yeah. And then, JR, you asked, could a non-narrator quality person do it? You could. I mean, you could. But the question is, whatever you're putting out, it needs to be good enough that people don't turn you off. Just like a bad book cover. Is it good enough to keep people listening? Is the story good enough? Is the narration okay enough that people are going to come for the next episode? That's a key thing to remember. People are very forgiving of a podcast versus, you know, the polished audiobook version. As long as you let them know what they're in for.
Jake Bible recorded Dead Mech on a goddamn 92 horrible Mac microphone that he actually had to wrap with gauze or the stockings taken from a Barbie doll as a pop filter. Okay, that's how he recorded Dead Mech, and the audio quality was horrendous. It was still an extremely popular podcast. But after nine episodes, somebody got pissed off and sent him a real mic.
I think I recorded the first five or six episodes of the Secret World Chronicle podcast with a $20 Logitech mic with no soundproofing except for a blanket, you know, kind of thrown over as a cave and recording into some laptop that is no longer in my house. As long as you let people know where you start out, you should be okay. But let people know what they're in for.
The other thing you can do is basically practice with some short stories of yours, put them in the same channel and see what people think of them. Ask for critique about the audio or what you're doing or whatnot. But I would say the first thing you should do is narrate a whole bunch, listen to how bad you suck and what your problems are, and then go back and try it again until it sounds good.
As if we had that amount of time.
And that's the other thing. Are you going to be better off writing? Now, if you're narrating your first draft and it's going to help you find, you know, the issues there, okay. Nothing wrong with that. But what's the best use of your time?
Does it pass the Wibo test?
Right.
The Wibo? Is that like Weebles?
Would you be better off writing?
Ah, Wibo.
Another author coined that phrase, so I can't take credit on that.
I'm passing the Wibo test by narrating an ancient trap because I can't afford to have somebody else do it. So if it's going to make money, it's going to have to get done, and I'm going to have to do it. So plus my skills are somewhat okay enough to make it happen. If you use the same audio for the podcast and for the audiobook, as long as they're not up at the same time, you can put them up at the same time. I do.
Podcast Amazon is different media than the audiobook.
You're not selling the audiobook, therefore Amazon can't do a fucking thing. ACX can't do anything. It is a completely different, separate presentation. The other trick I use, I'm going to do this on an ancient trap too. I'm going to use the special effects for the podcast version and sell the straight audiobook version, since audiobook people are weird about that. And then I'll sell a special edition for my site with all the radio comms traffic doing the stuff that it does, like what I do in the Derelict Saga. So that's another way I demark, you know, between the two things. No, ACX cannot throw hissy fits about podcasts. They cannot. They cannot. They may get grumpy about it, but there's not a goddamn thing they can do. Otherwise, I would have gotten a cease and desist by now. So it's not really a problem. Yeah, it depends on your channel. Xander says, depends on your channel, YouTube channel. Sure, it's out with your, put it out with your other stuff. Playlists are great. Yeah, for a podcast feed for different works.
You can do I would do different feeds for different works, but also have a master feed that has everything in it. Because you're going to have super fans who want everything that you've done. But I think all of the stuff that I've done, for Secret World Chronicle, every season has a different feed, but there's a master feed that has everything. Mm-hmm. I never got around to making a master feed of all of the stuff that I've put together because there's a lot. I know there's a separate feed for a couple other stories that I've done, but those are off in the cloud and I don't think people are going to find them.
Sigler says one feed and one feed only. Merlafferty has 50,000 feeds. Now, I can go back and see both sides of the same equation and say they're both right. For me, what I do is I have a single podcast, which is not really true. I have a single podcast feed, and then I have other feeds based on a playlist, but based on playlists on my site. But more and more people are just going to that one feed. For YouTube, everything is in playlists. So if you go there and say the Black series, all the Black books are in there. You can start from the very first episode and go all the way through what I published.
Tags are your friends.
And the same thing with the Derelict Saga and the same thing with my other books if they're in a series. You hit one, you get everything. You get the whole monstrosity. And that's really, really good for YouTube. Podcasting, you can make it a separate feed and do the same thing there. And the Black has its own feed somewhere. I don't even know if it's still live. I think it is. But there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. Yeah, have a single feed and then split it off into sub feeds with categories. But what you should be advertising is your main feed, because you want those people there to get all the announcements. You want those people there to see your reviews. You want those people there to see your interviews or whatever other kind of content you do. You want it all in the same place. Now, if you have a show that's just about like DRS, we would not be putting out fiction in DRS. It would make no goddamn sense for us to put any fiction out under DRS unless the three of us were collaborating, which is not happening.
Who would want that?
God only knows. Well, we still have to write our Amish zombie story at some point. So
was it Amish zombies in space or was it the Amish zombie romance story?
It was neither. was neither of those. What are you talking about?
It was the post-apocalyptic Amish story. Doesn't have to be zombies. Doesn't have to be zombies. Could be something more normal.
Robots.
Well, and that's what we came out first with. Ooh, robots. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like Terminator-style robots.
Oh, that would be freaking hilarious.
Except the Amish would only have, like, gears and stuff. They would be like the... Yeah.
Amish cyberpunk. Yeah, there
Amish cyberpunk. What is it? It's not cyberpunk. It's... What is it? What is the fiction brand where... Steampunk. Yeah, it's steampunk. Amish steampunk. That's what it is.
Amish steampunk.
Hmm. I'm just thinking about, you know, tricking out that butter churn.
If you have a comment or question about this show, you can send an email to show@debrobotsociety.com. You can find me on Mastodon at paul_e_cooley at vyrse.social. You can find us on Facebook at the Deb Robot Society Writing Community. You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/DRSPodcast, where you can find us live every Saturday at 3 p.m. CST. Like and subscribe so you know when we're always live. Wow, that rhymed. And if you want to support the show and help us pay some bills, you can find us at patreon.com/DRSPodcast and buymeacoffee.com/DRSPodcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to Mistress V spanking you.
Or, you know, you could go to the show afterwards where she's going to go ahead and discuss in more detail churning butter.
And at the $10 level, you get your names read. Our 10 star patrons are Nate Cosby, Antoine Batts, Tony L. Joy, Rick Shaw, Lisa Slack, Isabel Cushy, and Tim Niederreiter. Thank you to all of our patrons for making this show possible. We really appreciate it. Okay, now that I've gotten myself in trouble and get yelled at in the next green room, I think it's time that we say goodbye to y'all. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you got some information, and go check out my new book. My life.
Goodbye, Jebediah.
Bye.
My goodness.
Oh, Jebediah's got you saying, oh my goodness?
No. Just. Damn it, chat.
So much trouble.
Damn it, chat.
All right, for you After Dark folk, we'll see you real soon. Bye.